Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, fungal infections are a growing issue. The UGA researcher developing a vaccine.
And these populations that are at high risk for these kinds of infection are at risk for several of them, three, four, five different ones.
Plus, a local activist on a recent statewide award.
The BBC World Service.
What's going on here?
We get to the heart of global issues.
Stories we think matter from around the world.
Everything was there in a way that I'd never heard before.
Discussing the very best in global arts and culture.
What has been happening on the financial markets today.
Storytelling is something we absolutely love.
Everyone's voice is so unique.
Wow.
It's a celebration.
The BBC World Service.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. As the winter weather continues, so do winter illnesses. We're used to bacterial and viral infections, but what about infections caused by fungi? According to experts, fungal infections are understudied, but they can cause severe illness and can even be deadly. In this encore installment of A Few Minutes With, Dr. Karen Norris, the Georgia Research Alliance eminent scholar in immunology and translational biomedicine at the University of Georgia, joins James Hadaway to discuss her pioneering work to develop the first vaccine designed to prevent fungal infections. She explains why fungal infections deserve far more attention, why they're so difficult to combat, and how her team's research could transform the way doctors protect vulnerable patients. Here's their conversation.
I thought I might start by asking a fairly broad question, and that is, a lot of people know about viruses, bacteria. How are fungi different as a cause of disease?
Well, these are organisms, and there's multiple different ones that cause infections in humans and also in animals. And these are not as common as we're familiar with viruses and bacteria, but they are prevalent all in the environment. We're all exposed to these organisms. And some portion of the population can get very, very sick from these. And so they have not been as well studied as bacterial infections or viral infections that we're all familiar with. But recently, in the last 2 years, in 2023, the World Health Organization has recognized this, and they came out with a document, which was the first fungal pathogen priority list, to say that this is a global problem that has been understudied and not invested in terms of the research, and that they cause a tremendous amount of illness and death. And I often tell people that these are some of the most important infections and pathogens that you've never heard of.
So what are some of the most common fungal infections? I assume that there are some that are a little bit more everyday, more nuisance fungal infections, but there are also some that, as you already said, can cause very serious disease indeed.
Right. So we sort of group them in two parts, and one is the everyday surface fungal infections that are most common, people are familiar with. But then there are others that we call invasive, and that is they can actually invade in the body and become a systemic infection or even a very serious local infection in the lung, for example. And these are life-threatening infections. These are infections that, even with treatment, the best treatment that we have, can still have a very high mortality rate.
I've read that fungal infections can be particularly dangerous for people with, for example, uncontrolled HIV, or people who might have to take immunosuppressants after they've had an organ transplant. But do you see other vulnerabilities that might predispose someone to a fungal infection?
Yeah. So the most frequent situations for these life-threatening fungal infections are in individuals that have weakened immune systems, either, as you said, from HIV or individuals that have to take medicines that weaken their immune system, like a transplant patient or patients that have certain inflammatory diseases that take immunosuppressive drugs. Those individuals are very susceptible to these types of potentially life-threatening infections. And we found other high-risk categories of individuals that include chronic diseases like type 2 diabetes, lung diseases like emphysema, just obesity, chronic liver disease, and so on. And they're not thought of so much as immunosuppressive conditions, but we found a higher frequency of these serious fungal infections in those individuals, as well as the individuals that are profoundly immunosuppressed.
For those people who do contract a fungal infection, whether it's a nuisance infection or whether it's a serious infection, what are some of the current frontline treatments?
Well, there are really just three categories of antifungal drugs as compared to a whole series of drugs that you can use for bacterial infections. So for fungal infections, there are only three categories of approved drugs. And one of the difficulties is fungal organisms are more complex than virus or bacteria. And they have a lot of the same cellular processes as we do because they have the same kind of cells. And so there are fewer targets that would be specific for a fungal organism that would not harm our own cells. So that's what makes it very difficult to treat them. And for some of these individuals that are immunosuppressed, and so we know that they would be susceptible or at high risk, those individuals often get treated prophylactically, so for a long period of time in an effort to prevent them. And that becomes problematic for two reasons. One is these drugs can be toxic over time, and the other is that for any pathogen, bacterial, viral, fungal, if you keep treating the organism or the infection with the same class of drug over and over and over again, the organisms will adapt too, and they will mutate so that they're resistant to that class, that whole class of drugs. One of the big concerns in fungal treatments are the limited choices.
And is this level of drug resistance something that we're seeing more and more in patients?
Absolutely. So there are increase in frequency of drug resistance to one class or two classes or even three classes, and that has increased, you know, in the last decade or so. The other thing that we're finding is that there are emerging fungal pathogens. The most studied and the most evaluated is called Candida auris, and that has been reported in the popular press and newspapers and so on. And that is an organism prevalent in the soil. 10 or 15 years ago, no one knew it as a human pathogen, but it has been isolated from individuals, particularly in high-density populations, so in nursing homes and care facilities and hospitals and so on. And that already came to us as a pathogen with one or two types of drug resistance. So this is an organism that was prevalent in the soil, and it grows in the soil. This organism has adapted to warmer temperatures, warmer soil, and now it can survive in the human host.
There are a limited number of treatments, but your laboratory is taking a somewhat different track, and your laboratory is developing a vaccine for fungal pathogens. And as I understand it, this is a vaccine that could potentially work against multiple types of fungus. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the strategy here is to say what we do know, and that is in other aspects of infectious disease, there are antibiotic treatments or antiviral treatments, and there are also vaccines to prevent. Fighting that battle of finding a new target for an antifungal drug when there are limited targets and trying to get that all the way to market, that's a difficult strategy. And from our perspective, the fungal organisms have an advantage. There are multiple fungal pathogens that cause life-threatening illnesses in these susceptible populations. And these populations that are at high risk for these kinds of infection are at risk for several of them, three, four, five different ones. And so it is not possible to make a vaccine to one organism. An individual who is being treated for leukemia and has an immunosuppressive treatment strategy, they are susceptible to infections by an organism called Aspergillus, which causes a lung infection, Candida, which can cause a systemic infection, pneumocystis, which also causes a pneumonia. Any one of those could cause a catastrophic infection. So a vaccine to one of those is not going to move the ball forward, right? So our strategy was to look for something, a target, in fungal pathogens, the most important pathogens that cause the most damage, and say, can we find a target that is common to all of them? And the answer was yes. And so we found one and then said, could we make it so that we can enhance the immune response to this target so that the immune response will target each one of these pathogens if you happen to get exposed to pneumocystis or aspergillus? And that's our strategy. So we call it a pan-fungal, meaning it is across different fungal organisms.
And I understand that you already have seen some pretty significant success in preclinical trials for the pan-fungal vaccine.
We have, and we have published some of those results in scientific journals where we can model invasive candidiasis or pulmonary lung aspergillosis or lung pneumocystis pneumonia. And our vaccine will induce an immune response that protects or prevents sort of the catastrophic life-threatening infections in those situations.
What is the next step for the vaccine that you're developing in your laboratory?
Well, in our laboratory, we've done, as you said, the preclinical work, and now we have to work with partners in industry or the government to help us scale up and develop the vaccine so that it is so that we're able to test that in human clinical trials. And like any vaccine, the first test of a vaccine would be what is called a phase one clinical trial. And that's simply a safety trial, which healthy individuals get in immunized with the vaccine. And we look at any kind of positive or potentially negative effects and make sure that that it is safe. So that would be the very next step. And we are working with the NIH, the National Institute of Health, to partner with a company or companies that have the expertise to scale this up and figure out a way to purify it and so on. So those are kind of the next step in the development of it.
Well, I know I speak for everybody when I wish you the very best of luck. Dr. Norris, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Dr. Karen Norris is the Georgia Research Alliance Eminent Scholar in Immunology and Translational Biomedicine at the University of Georgia. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
During a busy day, it can be hard to make room for even one more thing. So it's a real plus that All Things Considered from NPR News is great for multitaskers. You can confidently add being well-informed to your to-do list and know that you will get it done. Whether you're cleaning out your junk drawer on a quick drive or something else, listen to All Things Considered every weekday afternoon.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Brittany Lopez has received much of her education in Athens, and she uses the support she received to pour back into the community. A recent graduate of Cedar Shoals High School and the University of Georgia, she was selected last summer As one of the 50 most influential Latinos in Georgia by the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, she is the only honoree to be chosen from Clark County. Lopez is also the food access coordinator with the Food Bank of Northeast Georgia. In this rebroadcast of their interview, she sits down with WUGA's Emma Auer to discuss what motivates her and the advice she has for young Athenians.
So first of all, I want to say congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Can you tell us a little bit about what being influential means to you?
Yeah, if I'm super honest, you know, for me, it's just how do I show kindness and what type of leader do I want to be? And that is, I want to make sure that I'm accessible. I want to make sure that I represent my community, that, you know, I am a voice of reason, especially when it comes to young people. I am the youngest person to have been recognized for this award in its history. But most importantly, we have to acknowledge that Latinos are, one, the fastest growing ethnicity in Georgia, and most importantly, the youngest in our state.
You are also a graduate of Cedar Shoals.
Yes.
Here in Clark County. What do you have to say to the current students at Cedar Shoals who might, you know, look up to you?
Take advantage of your teachers. I am who I am because Clark County has poured into me. I am a proud graduate of Clark County School. When I got this award, I was working for the school district with migrant education. So really, make sure you're learning from your teachers, you're connecting with your students, but also Cedar Shoals is so diverse, and all of those different perspectives and life experiences make you a better person. They make you well-rounded, they make you more empathetic, and they allow you to connect with people that are different from you. So immerse yourself.
Can you say a little more about, you know, being bilingual and expressing yourself as a leader? How do you see your role communicating between your community and sort of more powerful communities?
Unfortunately, many times to access communities that have influence, you need to know English. And that is not the case for many of, you know, my loved ones, the people in my community. So I see myself as a connector between the Latino Spanish-speaking community in the Northeast, right, not just Athens, and those stakeholders in power. And I try to do my very best to make sure that I listen and that I am an effective communicator for that community, but that I am also not the sole communicator. How do I bring people in with me into those rooms? And where can I facilitate translation if there's an opportunity for me to bring a guest and they're only a Spanish speaker? How do I make sure that I don't speak for them, but that I can interpret for them so they could express their own concerns themselves?
Brittany Lopez, thank you so much for sitting down with me, and congratulations.
Thank you, Emma. I appreciate y'all.
Brittany Lopez is the food access coordinator with the Food Bank of Northeast Georgia, as well as a 2025 recipient of the 50 Most Influential Latinos in Georgia Award from the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. She sat down with WUGA in October. As a new year begins, a look back at poetry from an Athens-based poet. O. Jeremiah Ogbakin is a PhD student in the University of Georgia's Creative Writing Program. He received his MFA from the University of Mississippi and has been published by the Kenyon Review and Poetry Magazine. Ogbakin sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer last April to discuss his work, which chronicles his first impressions of Georgia. Here's their conversation.
Can you read us your poem, "The Root Word of Babel is Babel"? And I will note here that the first word, Babel, is spelled B-A-B-B-L-E, and the second is B-A-B-E-L, as in the tower.
The root word of Babel is Babel. And this poem starts with some lines from a poem by Nigerian writer Gbenga Adesina titled "Glory." glory of the Latin of the dead and their grammar composed entirely of decay. And the poem begins, "We have many things to teach our dead, but they are busy sleeping when not fighting over a plot of graveyard. For instance, the cure for vertigo is to cut off the head of the task force who still insist on working despite the fatigue of tongues, instead of assent or further assent. They got it wrong from the start, building toward one tower, disappointed at their retreating gods pierced by the winding spires. They should have erected many towers like we now do instead of burning incense smoke that climbs far lower than the mushroom clouds that we now grow, seeded from a nuclear bomb over cities still shivering from radiation. We are not blameless neither. For instance, for every tower that Peachtree Street has sprouted, there are still so many, roaming unhinged, reaching for an imaginary bow. But we are not here to judge the living and the dead tongues, but to simply ask why the two-way mirror is the same as a one-way mirror. Why cleave antagonizes cleave in its slow fracture? Why a lover that wants to be left alone is not also asking to be abandoned?"
I have one last question for you. You said when you introduced this poem to me that it is about enchantment and disenchantment with progress. What do you feel is the poet's responsibility towards generations past and future?
The responsibility of the poet and the artist in general is the act of witness. If I were to advise, if I'm in a position to advise poet like myself, it is to resist the attempt to be a hero, you know. It is to resist the attempt to feel the need or the burden to do more than writing, because we often feel like our work is not complete without an act. Of course, they complement each other. Of course, it's a step above that. But the first and primary work of an artist is to witness both to the moment, to the present, to the past, and to the future. And that is what I attempt to do in this poem.
Oh, Jeremiah, thank you for sitting down with me to commemorate National Poetry Month.
Thank you so much, Emma, for inviting me to the studio. I'm grateful.
O. Jeremiah Ogbakin is a PhD student in the University of Georgia's Creative Writing Program. Ogbakin sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer last April. You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. This week's show was produced by Emma Auer. If you missed a portion of this broadcast, Athens News Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at WUGA.org, and will be rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8. As always, thanks for listening. And stay with WUGA throughout the week for the latest in-depth local news.